Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Traitors, last night, who was watching it? Well, John Byrne was. What did you think, John?
I thought it was fantastic, Colin.
It's, of course, your job to watch it, John, isn't it? Because you are the telly guy from RTE.ie. So this is an expert view of it. What do...
Hang on. Don't be calling me an expert now, you know. I just happened to watch a lot
of... Well, that was my first act of treachery, John. You should have expected that now, coming on, talking about this team.
I've got my eye on you. I mean, the thing that struck me about the show, when I remember seeing it when it started on BBC, was I was thinking, an Irish version of the Traitors could be amazing, because we're a bunch of sleeveins.
Sleeveins, shoneens, turncoats. I mean, we've a rich vocabulary for it.
Yeah, well, that's it. And it's part of what we are. You know, it's you can picture guys going, yeah, I've got your back, you're grand, and then booting them off 2 minutes later, you know.
Yeah, there's the lads who pay even any pub around the country, people patting their pockets when it comes time for their round. That's a low-level form of treachery itself.
I just want to check that the car is still in time with the old...
With the meter, disappear into the jacks. I mean, we have it in spades. The Irish history is littered with treachery. You know, various 1798, 1803, 1848, 1916. Take your pick.
Yeah, well, we how about 60 seconds? We were only in the show. The 24 players turned up, and within a minute, two of them were gone.
Gone, yeah, straight out the door. And jaw-dropping.
No messing here.
And the people who had to nominate them looking quite perturbed as a result.
It was Andrew from Limerick, who claims he's from Cork, had to pick those two out. And you could see he was licking his lips. He was obviously nervous about the whole process, but he went and did it because he wants to survive.
Now, look, people were warming up for a bit of treachery already in advance. You know, there was speculation, as you said. You were wondering how, having seen the Traitors done elsewhere, how it was going to work out with Ireland. People were sharpening the knives and getting ready to put the boot into the Irish production of it, because there's nothing we like better than to cut the high flowers of the field down to size as soon as we get the opportunity. It seems to be a bit of a national blood sport. But overall, in your assessment and by what, you know, what people have been saying around the place today, it seems to have been a rip-roaring success.
Well, Colin, I don't know about you, but Irish people love seeing themselves on the telly. You know, and the great thing about this show, really, is that they're ordinary people. You know, it's not like, say, Love Island. I mean, you wouldn't be seeing the people on Traitors Ireland going around in Speedos and bikinis.
Well, no, hey, don't say no yet. It could happen yet.
It could be a bit chilly around Sandcastle.
Yeah, swimming the boyne in a pair of Speedos might be a bit too much for a challenge.
And also, you can just see that, like, the three people who became Traitors, they're lapping it up, loving it, straight away.
For anyone out there, John, sorry.
That, you know, the moment Siobhan touched me, I said to myself, do not move. You know, be careful what you wish for. But I'm happy.
For the rare individuals who don't know what the concept is, because we have, you know, it's been trailed extensively in advance what it is, give us the sort of small pen picture of what Traitors is and what the idea behind it is and why it's so intriguing, why it's taken off around the world.
Yeah, well, basically, you get a group of individuals. With our one now, it's 24, which quickly became 22. And three of them are chosen as traitors, and the other 19 don't know who they are. You have to try and figure out who the traitors are and who the other side, the other 19, are called the faithful. And they're sent out on missions every day, which is kind of good for team building and what have you. And it also allows the traitors to, you know, stir the pot and, you know, maybe point in another direction, you know, deflect from themselves and that. And basically, whoever's left at the end gets the money. But if there's a traitor left at the end, the traitor gets all the cash.
Right. And now, the cash prize, John, is 50 grand. So not a small sum of money, although, you know, with inflation the way it is, getting smaller every day, but still 50,000 euros.
Well, you get a nice lunch and it's a hefty for that chunk. Now, you know.
Oh, what struck you about the contestants, though, and their plans? Because we were only talking about it earlier in the office. You know, there was a time when people would be talking about cash prizes. They'd be talking, you know, about around the world cruise, all sorts of things. But yeah, there was a bit of a running theme. In fact, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who didn't mention the plans they had for it, which were pretty much all the same, weren't they?
Yeah, that's it. It's about bricks and mortar.
Housing.
And it's a reflection of the times we're in. There's a housing crisis. And the vast majority were saying that they'd use the 50 grand as part of a deposit for a house.
It's not even as part of a deposit for a house. I mean, there was a time semi-Ds for 300 and something thousand was regarded as still quite expensive in the most expensive part of the country. But 50 grand would have cleared that 10% and more. Anyway, we have a clip of it for anyone who didn't see Traders last night. Here's a flavour of what people were saying when they were asked what they'd spend their 50 grand on.
Are you here to win the money?
50 grand, yeah. Yes, I could do a lot with that.
Most of it will go towards a deposit for a house.
My wife and I are looking to buy a house.
Put a deposit down for a house.
Potentially put towards a house. So I need a house. Everyone needs a house.
Wow. That's kind of tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it, John?
Yeah. Well, the other side of it is, you know, at least I'm not thinking of squandering the money. You know, I'm going to put the 50 grand on a horse.
Yeah.
The other way of looking at it is the people are being sensible here.
That's true. You know, it's an investment, but I suppose if you scrolled it back, let's say 20 years in Ireland, there might have been a different variety of things on offer.
Yeah, indeed. Well, once upon a time, everybody wants to buy a BMW or an apartment in France or Spain.
Yeah, and for some people, there was even more exotic locations, and we kind of know how that ended. But, I mean, you're not totally removed from this. And with people trying to get on the property ladder, this is something that's touched on your own family.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I mean, I'm at an age where, you know, I've got grown-up kids. And like my eldest lad, now he went himself and his other half. It took them a long time to get a house. And I remember saying to him at one stage, you just got to try and hang in there and try not to get down about it. And now, thankfully, they've got themselves sorted out and all that, you know. But it took a few years, you know. That's just the way it is now.
They had to move back to separate homes, ultimately, didn't they?
That's common enough these days, you know. And our youngest lad, who's in his mid-20s, he's still at home. You know, I don't think we'll be seeing it back in for a while yet, you know.
Right. You wouldn't advise him to be sticking his name in. Is he precluded because of the RTE connection from putting his name forward for any future series of Traders?
Well, I'll be retiring soon anyway, so that's not going to be an issue here in our household, you know.
Did that come up? Have you been chatting to the lads about it and their respective families? Is that something they picked up on as well, where they noticed that the chase into the deposit was a particular theme that coming up? I mean, it's by no means unexpected, but it's just remarkable the frequency with which it was said.
Yeah. Well, as I said, it's a reflection of the times we're in. And Irish people and property, it's always been a big thing. You know, nearly every Irish person wants to own their own home, you know. And when given the prices and, you know, I suppose the big problem is the rent, isn't it? People have to pay so much money for rent now, so they can't afford to save. And if you can't afford to save, you can't afford to buy.
It's the history of Ireland in one reality show, Land and Treachery.
Yeah,
the two great obsessions.
Yeah, and again, as I keep saying, this show reflects Ireland. It really does. You know?
What did you think of the characters in it? The people, you know, who were taking part. Did you get a good laugh out of them?
Yeah. Well, I suppose the main one would be the guy David from Dublin, who he's kind of like the life and soul of the party. And one of the first things he did when he came in was he started remembering everybody's name. And there's actually a clip of during the show of him going, "That's Jimmy, that's Mary, that's Paddy," and like named them all, and they were all going, "What the hell?" You know. But that's his tactic. Get in there, know everybody's name, because that always helps.
Is it a good idea, though, to be too good?
Oh, no, but the thing is, you know yourself, what would an Irish politician tell you? The bottom line is, remember people's names.
I know, but the other great rule is, you know, in school environments and when people are a bit insecure and they find themselves meeting for the first time, the person who's maybe outshining everybody else is a big fat target on their back.
Yeah, well, that's the other side of it, isn't it? You know, and then it also works the other way. You know, your man over there is very quiet. You know, like the whole one of the things about the show is you're suspicious of everybody, you know, and I think that's part of the thing. I mean, there's even a father and son there. They didn't know each other, had even applied for the show.
And the father, noted with pride, were great liars. He was proud of the young lads.
Yeah. And he's now one of the traitors. And it was a nice bit of editing. It then cut to the son going, I forgot to ask him if he was a traitor.
But your luck, would he have got an honest answer? Probably not. Stick with us, John, because
he knows his dad better than we do, so, you know, he might be able to figure something out from that, you know. But again, now obviously then Paddy has to think, do I boot my son off the show now?
Yeah, 100% he does. That's,
he might be a danger in the future, you know, and that's going to be very interesting to see how that one plays out.
I know, but anyone who's kicked football with their father on the beach knows there is no love lost when family is in competition with each other, you know. Play cards with your granny, you're a goner. Place a beauty with your brother. These are all, by the way, these are all issues of personal experience. I'm sure they may well be, insert activity here. I'm sure there's plenty of people around the country who've come a cropper when they've underestimated the viciousness of a relative.
Yeah, well, that's it. Nothing worse than family, as they say, Colin, you know.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's the other great Irish team. So we've got land, treachery and family so far. We have another John on the line who actually applied to be on the show. John, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Colm. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you keeping yourself?
Very good. Very good, thanks.
You watched with interest last night, did you?
I did, because I'm a fan of the show. I've seen, you know, the other episodes, the previous episodes and whatnot on other stations. But yeah, no, I watched with a lot of interest, but I thought it was very interesting what you said earlier on about, you know, people's aspirations, you know, winning such a huge chunk of money. And, you know, across the board, it didn't seem to matter what the age group was or what their personal circumstances were. Everything was about, you know, if we won, we'd get a deposit, you know, would go towards a deposit on a house. And it just shows you how far removed we have become from what would be a normal aspiration of being able to own your own home. And that, I thought that was very sad to see. And, you know, the other aspect to it for me is that, you know, for years now, we are talking about a housing crisis. And I just don't understand at what point does a crisis become an emergency? And, you know, that something more profound is done by the government to actually go towards solving the problem.
Well, let's hear the competitors again, because we had that round up there. But let's hear them talking about what their plans for the 50 grand was.
Are you here to win the money?
50 grand, yeah. Yes, I could do a lot with that.
Most of it will go towards a deposit for a house.
My wife and I are looking to buy a house.
Put a deposit down for a house.
Potentially put towards a house. So I need a house. Everyone needs a house.
And John, is that something you have personal experience of as well? When John Byrne was saying earlier, he was saying, you know, he has one child looking to get on the property ladder and another child who was 2 years struggling to get on it. I mean, is this something that's touched your own family as well?
Well, I think it's touched every family, Colm. Mm. And sure, you know, I mean, yes, you know, we have raised two young women who are professionals and married and so on. But look, it's just so difficult for them and for anybody, you know, who has gone through the traditional route of, you know, go to college, getting a good job, working hard. I mean, it's just it's almost beyond reach now.
And it's interesting, you know, the profile of people, you know, people taking part in game shows. It takes a variety of people. Some people are obviously on it for the crack. Some people are in it to win it. As John Byrne was telling us earlier, Irish people do like to see themselves on telly, but it may be for some people the only route they could think of to be able to gather €50,000. It was worth the shot because, as you say, the route of work hard in school, put the head down for the leaving, go to college, that old guarantee of you'll probably end up being better off than your parents is becoming less and less true over the successive generations.
I think that's very fair. Yeah, absolutely.
So what have you liked about it? I mean, is it hard to watch it when it wasn't just you? Was it? Did you apply to go on it as a couple, was it?
Oh yes, actually, I did. Now that you say it, I did apply to go on. I recently retired, and I said, look, I want to try anything and everything that comes up. And I just applied just for the fun of it.
Had you seen it somewhere else, or was it just, I'm going to apply to go on any reality TV show? You wouldn't have applied, for example, for Love Island.
No. I wouldn't. No. But it just appealed, the idea, just a new experience, and I thought it was an interesting concept and whatnot.
And the verdict, was it difficult sitting at home last night thinking, well, that could have been me, and, would you see yourself? or were you glad? Well, was there a bit of relief watching it last night?
Well, I think looking at the interactions and the number of people in it, I was more relief, actually. I wasn't too disappointed in the end that I didn't actually make it on the show because it's going to be pretty stressful there.
And what did you have to fill out on the application form? I mean, were there unique selling points? Did you have to fill out a box that say, did they ask you about, tell us about a time where you've caused a lot of trouble in a group of people and got them to fall out with one another? Did you have to kind of provide them with a negative CV?
Well, I don't know. Like, I fell at the first hurdle, Colin, because it was a short video clip. You apply and, you give your usual sort of your just some background details and that. So I didn't even get past the first form. So maybe further down the line, there was a more detailed process. But I'm afraid I can't tell you much more about it.
You didn't don the cloak and mask for that video clip, did you, and portray yourself as a sinister traitor?
Maybe I should have, actually. That might have picked your name out of the crowd a bit more. But,
and had you
maybe
been on
maybe
it
next time?
Had you been on it, would you like to have been chosen as a traitor?
Well, now that's the question, isn't it? I mean, I always side with the faithful, but I guess, it would be always interesting to see what it'd be like on the other side. I hadn't a burning ambition to be a traitor, but if it happened, it happened. If you're in, you have to go with it. I think that's the thing.
All right. Favourite character so far? Who, based on what you've seen so far, who would you like to see go all the way and win it?
Honestly, I mean, even just come to terms with the names at this stage, I couldn't pick one out at this stage.
Okay, John Byrne, any favor? Are you allowed to give us a favorite? I mean, I don't want to put you in a difficult position there, but is there anyone who's caught your eye who thought there's one to watch? Let's put it in terms of expert analysis. Go on.
Such a character. But the thing is, there's another thing about this show is the layers, because you're going to see other people emerging as the series goes on. That's what happens all the time. There's going to be people who are going to maybe a bit shy at first and gain a bit of confidence, and that could change things. And one of them could become a traitor, and they just dive into it and go for it. And more fun. I think it's going to be fascinating.
And do the traitors, the three traitors that are chosen, are they the traitors until the very end, or will more traitors
Every night, everybody gathers at the round table and they vote somebody out. Somebody who they think is a traitor. And more often than not, they pick the wrong guy.
Right.
So they still don't know there's three traitors there still. And even when a traitor does get voted out, they get replaced. Somebody else.
There we go. There's another bell rung in the historical bingo ticking exercise. In the execution
of
innocent people. There you go. Another theme from Irish history. All right, the two Johns. Thanks very much. We'll keep an eye on the traitors as the treachery unfolds. Back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Now, the school caretaker and secretary strike continues. It's an indefinite strike. There is no end in sight. The Department of Education says it'll continue to engage with all parties in the coming days, including on the Workplace Relations Commission. We've heard from Force of the Trade Union that represents caretakers and secretaries that the previous proposals at the Workplace Relations Commission, they felt they weren't going anywhere, and that's why they balloted for industrial action. But in some schools, special needs assistants, SNAs, have come out on sympathy strike. Niamh O'Reilly's one of those. Good afternoon to you, Niamh.
How's it going?
You're not crossing the picket line because your colleagues in Forsa are out on strike. That's the long and the short of it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
And what brought you to this decision? Because I suppose we should explain to listeners that special needs assistants, SNAs, have not been balloted for strike action, and your union has advised you not to strike in sympathy with them, but you're taking the decision that you won't cross the picket line and you are out in sympathy with the secretaries and the caretakers.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's not strike action from us. It's just a refusal to pass the picket. You know, if I was in a shopping centre and, for instance, Dunn Stores workers were striking, I wouldn't go into Dunn. You know, so I'm not going to do it on my colleagues. They're only looking for fairness. They're looking for exactly what we have.
So what is, I mean, your colleagues will be entitled to strike pay if they're out, and it's a fraction of what they would be paid in their wages and salaries. But in your case, presumably because this is an unofficial action, you wouldn't be entitled to strike pay, would you?
No, we're not entitled to be paid. We won't be paid.
So it's going to hit you harder in the pocket than the people who have been balloted for industrial action.
Yeah, for the time being. But, you know, long term, these people have no pension. When they finish, they work 20, 30 years in a school. They've no pension. They don't have sick leave. We have a secretary who went through cancer last year and she was entitled to nothing.
And what's...
Just because of her basic social welfare, sick or whatever. But the rest of us, we have, like, sick leave. Do you know what I mean? It's just not fair on them. Like, they really are the backbone in the school, the secretaries and the caretakers.
So there will be some schools where SNAs will be going into work in line with what the union has advised. You're taking that decision not to do that in the school you're working in North Dublin. I mean, has there been any discussions between SNAs in the school as to a kind of a blanket policy across the board, or is it very much on a school-by-school basis?
School by school, yeah, we haven't really been in touch with other schools. It was just a decision that we made. We have 13 SNAs in our school, you know. We're a big number of the staff, and we just thought that we should come out and show our support. The secretary, we've one secretary and one caretaker in our infant school, and we have one secretary in our senior school. They're very small numbers on their own.
And for the people you assist in schools, they're often the most vulnerable members of the school community. Children with additional needs. I mean, they'll be particularly affected by this, kids in mainstream education, for the moment at least, until schools shut through the weight of the burden of waste collection and payments and the like. They can continue going and attending classes, but without an SNA, kids with additional needs will be worst affected by the action you're taking.
Absolutely, yeah, you know, and that's something that we have to kind of fight with ourselves over, but the school is operating on a skeleton staff, and, you know, they're doing their best to make sure that everybody can come to school. But unfortunately today, our school did have to close the two ASD classes because we didn't have the SNAs to collect them in their taxi or to assist them in the room. But we had to make a decision, you know. We have to stand up for the secretaries and the caretakers. Without a secretary, I can't be paid.
Right, but, I mean, the impact... Without having been balloted for strike action, and your union is of the belief that, you know, the unofficial industrial action may even damage the public sympathy for the strikers that are out on the front line at the moment who have been balloted for industrial.
We don't see any evidence of that. We have full support from all the parents. We have parents standing on that picket line with us today.
But you appreciate there may be parents who, you know, wouldn't be able to drop their children off to school and be in there in sympathy with you because they're at home minding their children.
Yeah, of course.
So the parents you may be hearing from are the only ones who are in a position to show up. There are others who are so badly affected they can't be with you in sympathy.
No, and you know, this is what happens when there is strike action. Somebody is going to be affected somewhere. But, you know, it's not us, it's not the SNAs that's the problem, it's not the secretary, it's not the caretaker. The problem here is that they're not part of the public pension scheme, and it's very easily sorted.
So, I mean, do you have some difficulty with Force's position on this, in not balloting you for industrial action on this, or, you know, is there a difficulty with that, because... The issues that
no, I can understand they're thinking on it that maybe that they thought it could backfire on secretaries and that the public would have a bad view of them because, you know, children are not accessing what they need. So I can understand Force's thinking on it, but it's not what we saw today when we went out on that picket line. There's people driving up and down all day, you know, honking their horns, showing their support. We've had no negative feedback from anybody.
And the union's advice is, you know, join your colleagues at lunchtime, join your colleagues after work, make your presence felt, but continue to work.
I know, but in order to do that, we'd have to pass a picket. And it's just I've never passed a picket in my life, and I'm not about to.
I mean, do you think the action you're taking, I know you're taking it on a principled basis, and so it's not necessarily about the effect or otherwise, but do you think the action you're taking will actually help the caretakers and secretaries by making the operation of schools more critical and maybe focus the thinking of the powers that be to get back around the table on this?
Yeah, I think I would urge all SNAs and anybody else, any other staff, to come out and support your secretaries and your caretakers.
And where are you left legally as a result of this? I mean, if it's an unofficial action and you're not showing up for work and you haven't been balloted for industrial action, I mean, in other quarters we see where if things haven't gone through the hoops, the employer may take the union to the High Court because all boxes have not been ticked in taking industrial action. I mean, do you know legally where your position is, or are you taking this action first and see where it goes?
Yeah. We had to make a decision last night, and that was that we would come out and we would support our secretaries today. We will meet again today, you know, after school when we're finished on the picket line. The most we heard from the department today was to let them know what is happening tomorrow, because it could be viewed as a break in our service, and then our pensions will be affected.
But I don't have any insight into what discussions you've had. If there was an attempt to do that, could you see ballots for industrial action going in from the SNAs at that point?
Probably. I'm not entirely sure, as I say, because it's very early days, and today we just came out and, you know, did what we had to do this morning. But we'll sit down now and we'll have a look at, you know, what's happened today. I don't think there's been any further talks. If there is, we haven't heard anything of it, and we'll take it from there.
Right.
When we all meet.
But as long as the picket continues, you won't be passing it?
No.
And of the parents that you have been talking to, for those who have made it along and who've, you know, been talking to you, what have the conversations been like? What are they saying to you?
We actually had parents today who said, well, go in and take the children out with you, but obviously we can't do that, you know, but that's how supportive they are. And we've had parents stand on the line with us today after they collected their children from school. We still have parents out there now.
The Department of Education stance says that special needs assistants have not been balloted for industrial action. They're not included in this action. And as we've already discussed, the department says we understand that FORSA has issued guidance to SNAs on this. I mean, is there maybe scope to go back to FORSA and talk about this? Would you be better protected if you were balloted? Or under workplace relations legislation, I don't know what the situation is, are you entitled to strike in sympathy with your colleagues?
Well, not at the moment, obviously, because the union haven't asked us to, but we're hoping that they do, you know, change on that and get us out there striking with the secretaries. But I don't see it happening, to be honest with you. But as we say, we're not striking, we're just not passing a ticket.
Okay. And you would like the union to ballot you and make you officially part of some form of industrial action anyway, would you?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I was listening to principals last week. I was talking to them and they were saying they thought that schools might find themselves closing. You say you can't be paid without the secretary administering those payments. There's other issues, you know, emails being sent out by schools, not all of them, but some of them being sent out by schools will be affected. Waste collection by the caretakers, general maintenance, all of those things. I mean, how long would you see schools being able to operate without caretakers, secretaries and, you know,
not very long
and yourselves?
At all. I mean, we work in an infant school. We would have, you know, a lot of issues around, you know, with toilets and plumbing and things overflowing. We're working with infants, you know, we need our caretaker on site. You know, he looks after the landscaping in the school, as you say, the waste. There is a lot of work done. It's a very big school and it's not going to last long without a caretaker at all. And the same goes for the secretary. The work that the secretaries do in any school will tell you, it cannot operate without a secretary. If an SNA is out tomorrow, if I'm out tomorrow, you will find a sub for me. If a secretary is out, you're not going to get a replacement.
Well, they can't. Yeah, that's what the principals were saying. They can't. They're not going to be able to get somebody in, contact stand-in teachers, because that's just can't be done without the secretary. And they, well, more to the point, they can't. They could be sourced, but they couldn't be paid.
They can't pay us up. Nothing. Like, the secretary is vital to the school. As a caretaker.
Was it a difficult decision? I know that it's almost instinctive to you, and you know, you just wouldn't pass a picket line. That just is second nature for you, not to pass a picket line wherever you see one. But was it at the same time a difficult decision, knowing the children who depend on you? Was there any moment of hesitation on your part to be guided by what the trade union is telling you, what Forces says, and say, look, go into work, do the work that you're employed to do, and let the school secretaries and the caretakers do the picketing and take this industrial action? Was there any difficulty in making the decision you arrived at?
There was, yeah. I mean, one of the children that I assist has medical needs, you know, and obviously you're going to be worried about the kids and anything happening, you know. You feel quite guilty over that. There are other kids with other needs. You know, we had junior infants who only came to school for the first time on Friday, were introduced to their SNAs, and then there's nobody there for them today. Of course, like, we had big talk about that yesterday, but ultimately, we just came to the decision then about not passing the picket. They're our colleagues, they're our friends, you know, and they deserve what they're looking for. They're not looking for anything extra. They're looking for fairness.
And did they expect you to do this? Because they'll be aware of the union guidance as well. I mean, had you gone in under union guidance, would your caretaker and secretary colleagues and friends have understood that you were doing this fully within the union guidelines?
It was actually news to them this morning at 9 o'clock, 10 to 9 our school starts, and it was news to them this morning. They were about to give us a hug and off to go to work, and we were like, we're not going, we're staying with you. They were actually quite emotional about it.
And when you think of that child, you know, with medical needs, obviously, you know, we're not going to identify or give out any details on air that would identify the child, but when somebody is dependent on you to be able to attend school, and obviously it's, you know, it's great to have special needs assistants who can provide that support in school. I know you said you feel guilty about it, but what about that kid? It's more than about your feelings to them. It's about their ability to attend school and thrive.
Well, the children in mainstream did all attend school today, you know, and they were looked after by a skeleton staff, and it was very difficult for the people who were inside the building, obviously, management wise and that, and people sacrificing breaks and what have you, but it's something has to be done. We can't ignore what's going on. These people are not getting what they're entitled to.
Right. I mean, is there going to be bad feeling now with the teachers who have gone in?
No. Like, it's a personal decision, and we understand people who feel that they can't pass the picket, but we also understand people who feel that they can't leave the children. You know, there's two sides to it, and everybody just has to do what they feel is right for them. But we're all very supportive of each other. You know, they support us outside and we support them inside.
But you don't agree with the teachers going in and passing the picket line then?
I understand. You know, and it's everybody's personal choice. It's not going to drive a wedge between us. You know, we're very close in our school. You know, we work very closely to do our very best for the children, but today just had to be about the caretakers and the secretaries.
Okay. Niamh, stay with us. Mike, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. Thanks for coming on. You think you might have a solution to this, do you?
Well, look, it's something that has happened in the past. I worked for Inland Fisheries Ireland for quite a long time. And I remember a time when some of the secretaries who had been there on long-term contracts, and maybe other part-timers as well in IFI, and they were able to get pension rights I suppose, terms and conditions similar to all the rest of the staff. And they were allowed by back half their service to augment the pension. So moving forward, they had the pension and they were able to buy back whatever service that they had. Buy back half of it over a period of years, and that might be a way forward. But I think everybody is entitled to have a pension in this day and age. Right. And you have the government as well trying to bring in pension rights. So it seems to be all in order, in my opinion.
Right, so we've been down this road, in your view, 20 years ago, the idea of giving pension rights to school secretaries, if it has been viewed somewhere in the bowels of the Department of Education or public expenditure and reform as somehow the beginning of a slippery slope, you dispute that view, would you?
Yeah, it's not a slippery slope. It's already been done in the fisheries service a long time ago. And I know I was in the office with the girls that were sort of looking for it, you know, that they had it. And they got it. I can't remember all the ins and outs of the negotiations. It didn't directly affect me at the time, but I was aware of it all the time that it was there and that people were able to buy half their service at the end of it. So they had the same conditions as all the other staff, and they were able to join the pension scheme and make up at least some of their year's service.
Right. We should say that we don't know if that proposal has been tabled at the Workplace Relations Commission as a potential solution to this. But anyway, that worked with inland fisheries. But Niamh, I'm just looking down through, you know, the Force of Trade Union statements, and the union believe that SNAs do support their colleagues in their action by not carrying out the tasks of caretakers or secretaries and sticking to the job they do and not taking up any of the work that their colleagues do. And teachers and principals have similarly taken that position in bulletins out to parents. They've told them, look, we won't be doing any of the work that caretakers and secretaries do. You don't feel that's enough, do you?
No, I think they need support out on the line.
Okay, well, can you see any, I mean, from where you are, the school principal and the teachers and the whole school community seems to be in support of the secretaries. This is something that's going to have to be done at a much higher level than the one that schools are operating at. I mean, do you have any sense of how far apart the sides are at this stage yourself, Niamh?
Well, there doesn't seem to be any progress at all. Now, as I say, you know, I don't know what happened today. I don't know what's going to happen, if there's going to be even further talks. I didn't even hear of any further talks today. But something will have to be done. And I think the caretakers and the secretaries should just keep going on and on, because, you know, the schools will not cope without them.
Okay, Niamh O'Reilly, thanks for that. And Mike, thanks for your insight into this dispute, or how it's been resolved potentially before, but we don't know. We don't know whether or not, as I say, those proposals have been tabled at the WRC. All right, we're back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
It's Joe Mooney. Good afternoon to you.
How are you, Colin?
Tell us about what was going on in Fairview Park over the weekend.
Saturday afternoon, midday, despite the rain, over 200 people gathered from the local community to hold a vigil under the title Stop Racist Attacks, End Violence Against Women. Very powerful get-together. It was in response to a couple of recent incidents, but also despite the serious nature of the incidents and the reason why the vigil was called, it was a very positive gathering, because what it really sent out a message was that amenities like Fairview Park are brilliant. They're really important to our community. We don't want to be associated with violence or intimidation. And enough is enough, really. And as I said, it was very positive. It was all about preserving what we have in our community that is so valuable to our community and what we love. A few people might be causing problems there, but they're in a tiny minority. And it was a message from the community that we won't be standing for that.
And as you say, you know, 200 people showed up in not the best of weather, the pours of rain, really. And what was the atmosphere like?
Surprisingly, despite the rain, and as I said, despite the seriousness of the reason we were all there, it was a very, very good atmosphere, very positive. There was three, we kept it short, which was obviously intention. But we had three really good speakers. We had a representative from the Indian community who spoke about the issues faced by migrants with racist attacks. We had Paula Kearney, a community activist born and reared in the area, still active in the area, talked about the threats often faced by women, which come from many sources, as we know. And we had Daniel Ennis, who's involved with a number of local clubs, like the the Bessborough East Wall Football Club, North Inner City side by side with works with children with exceptional needs. So they all spoke about the work that they're involved in and different aspects of it all. But overall, the message going away was positive. It was solidarity, support for the people who have been subject to violent attacks, but really, really strong that the people there were saying, we don't want this to ever happen again, and we're going to work to make sure that this happens. It really was about pride in our community and about stressing the positives.
And as you say,
also being, sorry.
Sorry, no, no, go on.
No, no, far away, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, but like, as you say, it is a community amenity. It's a park close by the sea. It's, you know, for anyone who doesn't know it, it's a lovely green space with plenty of trees. People pass through it going in and out of the city centre. It's a place for a walk. It's a place for people to relax in. Unfortunately, back in the 1980s, the name Fairview Park was synonymous with a brutal attack that was carried out on a gay man in Fairview Park. And the park, that's presumably something you don't want to happen again, that Fairview Park becomes synonymous with antisocial behaviour and becomes a space really that people are afraid to use as a community amenity.
No, absolutely not. And I think it really has to be emphasised that hundreds of people use the park every day, thousands use it every week. The park in the 80s and the 90s was associated with some unpleasantness, of course. There was open drug dealing there, there was gangs there, there was even joyriding going on through the park. Things that the community worked hard to eliminate. In recent years, the park, I have to say, it's an amazing facility now. Dublin City Council have put a lot of effort in. There's basketball courts, there's a skate park in there. The greenery and the flower beds are incredible. There's public art there. There's a couple of playgrounds. It really is an amazing facility. It's used by thousands of people every week. Mm. So I would like to think that the bad days are just something in our memories. But of course, when you do have incidents like a racist attack on an Indian man, attack on a woman who's coming along the East Wall Road to go into the park, you can't just ignore them and hope for the best. So really, we stressed again the positive nature of the park, how valuable it is to our community. But you have to highlight those negatives and talk about how do we tackle them and make sure they don't continue or happen again.
Right, and you live close by Fairview Park yourself, presumably for a good number of years. You've used it as an amenity yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Like, my kids would have played there when they were kids. My wife would have played there when she was a kid. And, you know, probably her parents were there with their kids. It's a brilliant facility. You know, when you see people in the park now, you see people you see kids there with their grandparents who were there when they were kids. You see yoga classes, 100 women doing yoga in the park on Saturday. There's weekly park runs. There's football all the time in the park. It is a brilliant facility. And I was involved with the community for many, many years. And, you know, down to those years, we've always worked on positive aspects of our community, including the park and events in our communities. We've also dealt with the negatives. And we have had dark days before, and we don't want to see them again.
Yeah, and people would have, unfortunately, people have concerns about public spaces all over the country. It's not limited to Fairview Park. The reason we're having you on is because you actually decided to go out and do something about this and gather 200 people to say, let's pull the brakes on this now and not let the, at least try to say that the community is against antisocial behaviour in the park.
Yeah, and it's important to say, I mean, there are communities around the country and around the city who have done similar when they've been faced with similar issues. I don't think we're unique. As I said, I've been involved with the community for many years. I'm also involved with Dublin Communities Against Racism. And in response to the recent incidents, residents in different communities around the park, Marino, Fairview and East Wall, wanted to do something, and I was asked to help organise it.
Right.
It was a community initiative. It was supported by Dublin Communities Against Racism and Zero Tolerance Dublin Central, which deals with issues around violence against women. Well, it was a huge success and very, 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 very positive. And it's something that, you know, we should be, like, we finished up the rally with a poem from an immigrant woman who's been here for many years. The last line of the poem was, "There in a green land where all of us live in peace." And that was a very strong message. And we finished up with the last word where we hope we don't have to ever do this again. And I think that's the message that was sent out on Saturday.
although, you know, I suppose when you get a good thing going and people are prepared to turn out and give a positive message, it may not be the last time. Were there any kind of banners or flags or anything that would have identified what the group was about for anybody passing by?
No, we were very clear at the residents' request that we asked that there be no party political displays. And though a number of political figures turned up, councillors and TDs, they were there just to take part, not to highlight themselves. There was no banners or display. But very importantly, the Irish tricolour was flown throughout the event. And that was really important. And it was explained at the beginning of the rally or at the beginning of the vigil and at the end of the vigil why it was flown. And what was said very clearly is the Irish tricolour was flown proudly throughout this event. Its importance as a symbol of unity, anti-sectarianism and overcoming division was stressed throughout. And that's really important because we see around the city and not too far from Fairview Park, we see people flying the tricolour and they're using it to send out a very nasty message. They're using it to express some kind of superiority, to express racism and hate towards the migrant community. And that's not what the tricolour is about. These people do not understand the history of the tricolour, what it stands for. So it was important for us there, as we were sending out an anti-racist message and the message of togetherness for our communities, to have that flag to negate what other people are trying to do with it.
Right.
And we want to make sure that...
I mean, do you feel that the current discussion about taking down flags when they're hung out in particular areas runs the risk of people who portray the flag or use it in a particular way would almost, that ownership of the flag would be nearly ceded to them if the flag in and of itself is seen as a negative when it's hung up?
Absolutely. And that's why we made sure that the flag was there as a positive. And we would love people to see it as a positive symbol. In regards to the people who put up the flag, we can see what's happened across the water. In England, the same thing has happened with the Union Jack and the same thing has happened with the George's Cross. These are being put out there to send out a message of hate and intimidation. But there's also a trap in it as well, because these people are trying to get a reaction. And that's what's happening with the tricolour. These people are putting it up as a symbol of hate, as a symbol of intimidation. And they want controversy. They want them taken down so they can run around saying, oh, they hate the Irish, they're just anti-Irish, we're the real Irish. My opinion, if the flags break the bylaws, they have to come down. We also know that the rain, the traffic, they'll get dirty, they'll get wet, and they'll be hanging looking awful in a week or two. Are those people going to go out and replace them? I very much doubt it. But what I would like to see is maybe an effort taken to explain the story, the history and the symbolism of the tricolour. Maybe on the poles where there's tricolours put up, if they're there as a symbol of hate.
Right.
Maybe put up a cardboard poster underneath it that explains the true history and the true meaning of it.
And maybe included in that, it'd be worth pointing out that the flag actually did come back from France. It was as a kind of a revolutionary symbol. It was drawn up in the likeness of the Republican tricolour in France.
Yes, in many ways, while it is the Irish tricolour, in some ways it is a foreign flag. It was a gift from a foreign nation. And the people who are using the flag as a symbol of hate at the moment, they don't get it. They never do anything positive for their community. They have nothing positive to say. And now they're even using the flag as a negative. And we have to reject that, and we have to make sure that's not what becomes the story of our flag.
Joe, hang on there, because on the etiquette of flags, you were talking there about them being left out overnight and the treatment of them and the danger of them becoming tattered and unsightly. Dave Maloney, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. The flags on lampposts up there with cable ties not being raised in the morning and taken down in the evening. You have concerns about the treatment of the flag, do you?
Well, yeah, I think, and I'm always talking when it comes around to this subject, which isn't often, that like our national flag, which was, without sounding too patriotic, you know, was fought and died for, and I think it should be offered the deference that offers the deference that it respects or it
deserves.
It should be afforded in all circumstances. It's should be shown and given recognition. Like we hear, the flag is left aloft. And I'm looking at a situation here in County Limerick now where there are flags flying, and there's an Irish flag, American, Canadian, British, and a French flag, and they're flying morning, noon, and night in the darkness, washing around the place.
All right. Well, you're highlighting, I think, yes, two potential problems, yes, there: leaving a flag flying morning, noon, and night, number one, and leaving it flying in the darkness. What are the two specific issues with that, in terms of the treatment of the flag?
So when the Ireland flag is flying, it should be flying aloft and free, and it should be illuminated at night time. If the flag is going to be flying at night time, during darkness, it should be illuminated, or else the flag should be taken down. And like, if we want to show us the utmost respect, it should be taken down ceremonially. And there are parts of Dublin, just across from the Taoiseach's office, I forget what the park is, and every morning, two members of the forces walk across the street.
Merrion Square Gardens, where the memorial to members of the Defence Forces is, and there's a flame in there as well.
Thank you, exactly. That's exactly it. And it's a joy to watch them do it every single morning. And those are the boys that will show you how to do it. And it's worth, like, everybody at some stage should be, and it should be included in the curriculum, how to deal with the national flag, what to do with it, what it is, why it's there, why we have it, the respect you show for it, and why, and just the general conditions around the show of respect that the flag deserves, regardless of what flag it is.
And the state presented, I think, a copy of the flag to every school around the country in 2016. To commemorate the 1916 rising, I think members of the Defence Forces went out with the flag, and there was a bit of education around it. But you heard Joe Mooney's call there for people to be educated on the history, the background, the symbolism of the flag, and what it means as an Irish Republican emblem. You'd agree with him on that, would you?
Absolutely. Hear, hear, 100%. And there should be a paragraph at least, within the curriculum at some level, somewhere, that the next generation are being taught about the flag and all of that, those contexts.
And do you see any room, Dave, that for people, to drape a tricolour around their shoulders and go and cheer on a national team, or hang it out their window during football celebrations to use it as a sign of support for national teams? Or does that contravene the etiquette you're talking about?
Okay, well, that could be a bit of a fuddy-duddy or a stick in the mud, but for me it would.
It would it?
I think that the flag should be just held in a different category than a supporting or a celebration or one of those. Like, it's okay on St. Patrick's Day, you can often buy them about the place, and they're on a stick and they're properly presented. And I think...
That's okay, is
like,
it?
I think it is, but dragging it out the back of the boot of your car on the way up to Dublin to an international, I don't think is the right thing to do.
All right, but how strongly do you feel about that? I mean, do you believe that that's your personal view, or do you think there's widespread abuse of the flag going on and how it's treated at the moment?
I don't think there's anybody that flies the flag improperly that is doing it so out of badness or ill intent. I really don't.
All right. What do you make? I mean, you heard Joe Mooney there referencing what's going on over in England at the moment with the Fly the Flag protests, the use of the George's Cross and the Union Jack as a symbol of opposition to immigration, and the widespread hanging out of flags in Dublin seen as part of that as well. I mean, do you have a view on the appropriateness or otherwise of using the flag in that way?
I don't think it's appropriate to fly the Ireland flag out the window as a signal of support for anything other than pure national pride. I don't think the flag should be used to fly in the face of people or to show people that they're welcome or not welcome. I think our national flag is above and beyond all of that.
All right. Joe Mooney... Yeah, I'll just go back to Joe on the other line. What is the effect, Joe, at the moment? I know you were keen to try and point out the origins of the flag, the story of the flag and its symbolism. But the proliferation of flags on lampposts, I know you have a view on what the intended effect of it is, but is it having that actual effect of intimidating people who have immigrated to Ireland?
I think that is the intent behind it. And obviously, I'm not going to mention anybody or any parts by name, but we know who's putting them up, and that is their intention. And I do believe, and this is a terrible to have to say, but I do think that some people are feeling intimidated by this, and they're feeling nervous when they see the flags. We know, we've seen threats online that if anyone takes the flags down, they'll be dealt with. People have threatened that if council workers are taking the flags down, they'll be photographed and identified. So if that's people's attitudes, you know they're not nice people. They're not people with the best interests of our communities at heart, and they're not respecting the flag.
And would you have had any concerns, you know, the demo you had in the park over the weekend, or as you say, you know, you can appreciate that there are people who would be nervous, council workers, perhaps if they were asked to do it, would be nervous of taking them down. I mean, did you feel any vibes, any antipathy about having that demonstration in Fairview Park over the weekend? Was there any reluctance amongst people in the community to show up because of what's going around on social media?
What I would say is there was an eagerness to have something in the park. People wanted to show that we didn't accept what was going on. That included the strong rejection of the social media message and the message that's been spread in our community, spread by some people about foreign nationals. There was a strong feeling in our communities that we wanted to say something publicly about this and stand up and say it. And part of that was to make sure that we held the flag as a symbol of unity and welcoming. So there was no antipathy.
Okay.
There is a bit of concern all the time because you see the fire and the fury and the aggression that is put out by people, anti-immigrant people and racist people. So people are a bit reluctant at times to put their head up. But no, there was an absolute eagerness to be out there and sending out a positive message from our community.
Okay, Joe Mooney, thanks very much for that. And Dave Maloney to give us your insights into how the flag should be treated by the official playbook. We'll take a break, back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Now, they're withdrawing en masse through the mud, shuttle busing back to Portlaoise train station in cars, slowly crawling their way in all directions on the N7 and down the back roads and everything else. The Electric Picnic Festival has closed for another year. Claire Hartigan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colm. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. You still have your voice.
Yeah. No, I'm a pro at this point.
you were singing along to some of the acts. Any particular highlights there?
Well, I have to say, seeing Chaperone from the top of the Ferris wheel and the crowd and all the every girl in the place, I'd say, was there, and every boy actually screaming for Pink Pony Club was fairly high up there on memories, like for me. Right. You know,
were you belting it out from the top of the Ferris wheel yourself?
I was too busy holding on, to be honest with you.
Sweat from your palms running down the pole in the middle of the...
Absolutely. Frightening up there, but well worth it now for the experience and to see the crowd. Crowds were phenomenal. Actually.
Really? Good atmosphere?
Oh, absolutely amazing. Every gate, I mean, from kneecap to Hozier to the Hogan Brothers with the concert orchestra, like it was just packed. I mean, and people showed out in support, and the energy was great, the smiles all around. Like it was a really good one, I have to say, in spite of the weather being threatened to be
down
so bad.
For the whole thing, were you wellies on, tent up?
I'd be a little bit I'm like a granny now at this point, almost. I'm not a granny, but I have a kind of a posh setup because I do a bit of work there, so I'm not quite the muck. I don't quite do the muck thing now.
Don't
to be
do the muck.
You.
No, that's fair enough.
I have a caravan.
Okay. Now, whatever about singing along to Chapel Roan or anything else, you were left speechless by a beautiful moment there over the weekend, were you?
Yeah. I was walking along. I was going to heading in the direction of Trailer Park, and I was close to the Chapel of Love. And next one I spotted...
The Chapel Roan, no doubt, at this stage.
Chapel Roan. Yeah, well, the Chapel is horse, so she's the horsey girl. Chapel. So this one girl down on her knee in the mud, and I was wondering what was going on. And next one I noticed a hand stretching out, and then I saw a little sparkle, and I was thinking, oh my God, that's not happening right in front of me. And I looked around to see, was there anyone else noticing, and I called my husband and I shouted at him, and he came back and he nodded. And in the meantime, my hands are shaking. I'm trying to get my phone out.
You were all of a doodah, were you?
Oh, my God. It was just like one of those moments like where the world was passing by and I was stopped in this still moment in the middle with the two girls, like, you know, clearly like a proposal, you know. And she said yes. And then I, of course, hadn't my camera out at this point. I was like still trying to get it on. And I took a few photographs of the, you know, the hug that they had just, you know, they just had a little
you were
moment.
still trying to get your camera on. We hasten to point out.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. My hand was shaking. I was in like, I don't know. I got totally overwhelmed by it.
It's just, we didn't want to give anyone the image of you trying to get it on in the mud at the electric picnic. We need to just clarify the exact meaning of that. Anyway, you did get your camera out and you approached, approached the happy couple. It was the real deal, was it?
Well, I said that to them then. I said, is this for real? It's like, because, you know, people get married there all the time. They meet up and they, you know, go into the church and, you know, they never see each other again. You know, it's kind of a thing, you know. Whereas, you know, they were actually clearly, one was shocked, the other was delighted. They were clearly thrilled with themselves. And I said, I'll take a picture. And I took a picture. I said, is this for real? And we all hugged then. So it was me and the two of them in the middle of the field.
Beautiful.
Random.
And the mystery women, did you get their number and pass on the picture by social media channels or email or...
Well, you're up there, you don't, I don't know, it's like phones don't work, like the text messages come through 3 hours later, you don't, you're not really thinking, like, you know, it's kind of, you nearly have to throw your phone away. I'd have it with me for work reasons, like, you know, so I kind of, I just didn't think like that. So I told them where they could find me, but then I thought they probably wouldn't find me either, and I just really want them to have the picture.
So it's a shout out, is it?
Yeah.
Great, so
please.
If you are the couple that got engaged at the electric picnic and had your photo taken and the group hug with Claire, she wants to contact you. Claire, how do people contact you through Liveline? Is that the best way of doing it?
Yeah. Great. Or I have my we're Papa Presents is the group. So I actually put the picture up on Papa Presents, hoping that's where I told them I'd put it, but I thought they might forget. So I thought that you guys might actually do a shout out for them, you know?
Okay, well, we did talk about proposals on Liveline on Friday. So it's great to hear that. Who knows? Maybe they were listening. Maybe it was inspired there. I would have thought an electric picnic proposal wouldn't have involved a ring at all, that it'd be like a Cinderella-esque slipping the proposal welly onto somebody in the mud. But there you go.
Yeah. No, there was, you can check the photograph, the little sparklers there and everything. It's a done deal.
Claire, we've got more proposal news coming up after the break. Stay with us.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
And if you are the soon-to-be-wed, welly-clad women wearing winsome grins at the electric picnic and you want to get those pictures, at Papa, P-O-P-A underscore presents is the social media handle. You can get in touch with Liveline 51551 for text or 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApp. John Lister, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Colin.
You didn't propose at the electric picnic. You were, they would have just, the 80,000 people over the weekend would have looked like mere ants below you as you soared high for your proposal. Tell us about it.
Well, it was back in 1997. I brought my wife, my girlfriend, then to Paris to get engaged. And, you know, it's all going well and we're having a great weekend there.
Sorry, John, to cut across you. Are you on a speaker there?
No, hang on, I'll push it. No, hang on.
Yeah, we'll get you down on one knee, maybe. Out with the ring box. Let's recreate the proposal atmosphere there. It's just sometimes
that better.
That's a lot better. Yeah, fire away. A bit better.
We went to Paris anyway, and I just said I was trying to go up the Eiffel Tower and get and propose to my girlfriend, which was going on well. But when we went up there, we're having a nice time. The views are beautiful. We had something to eat up there. But when I was at the top, the wind blew and hit her hair went into her eye, and she got very, very upset and very sore over it. So it kind of lost the moment.
The moment was gone. Right.
The moment was gone, and I said, "Oh my lord, I'm in trouble here now." I said, "We're going home there the next day," so I kind of stopped. I said, "No, I can't do it now. You know, Mo got very upset." So anyway, we were coming home the next day on the plane, and I said, "No, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this in the plane." So I said, I asked air hostess, would she mind if I asked my girlfriend to marry her? And she said, no, only if I could do it over the intercom.
Okay.
I said, okay, fair enough. So she would then ask the captain for permission for me to be on the intercom, obviously. So I sat down beside Mo, back down again, and she was doing her crossword. So she gives me the nod, the air hostess, and I walk up to the phone. And they picked the phone up, and Mo saw me going up and said, I remember she telling me afterwards, he's going to sing a song, he's going to do something mad. So I took the phone, and I got down on one knee and walked just down to Mo and said, we're at 30,000 feet, 500 miles an hour, will you marry me? In front of everyone over the intercom.
And she said?
And, she said yes, okay. And everyone clapped, and it was so beautiful. It actually worked out better, Colin, to be honest with you. It's amazing how things work out.
We can still hear the happiness in your voice, John. The clock's against us, though, but thanks for sharing the proposal with us. That